The recording has started.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Welcome, everyone. This is our in-person meeting of the Judicial Branch Budget Committee, January 18th, 2024. Happy New Year. We'll still say Happy New Year through January. Just reminders to everybody participating today. This is an open meeting. It's open to the public and it is being recorded. This is an in-person meeting. However, some participants are joining remotely. Members of the public can watch the meeting via a listen-only video feed. Those of you appearing remotely, please remember to mute yourself when you are not speaking and unmute yourself prior to speaking. To minimize background noise, please mute yourself, as I've said, before you speak again. Also, please identify yourself for the recording. And Ms. Callan, will you please take roll?
Judge Mormon, present. Mr. Yamasaki.
Present.
Justice Fujisaki.
Here.
Justice Hill.
I don't think he's going to be able to make it today.
Okay, thank you. Judge Armendariz.
Here.
Judge Bakke.
Here.
Judge Crofton.
Here.
And Ms. Rachel Hill.
Here.
All right, we have a quorum.
Okay, great. So our first matter of business today is to approve the minutes from our previous meeting of November 15th, 2023. The minutes appear at pages 3 and 4 of your written materials. Anybody have a motion?
Yamasaki moves.
Second. Thank you. Any questions or discussion about the minutes? Hearing nothing, all those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? All right, thank you. The minutes are approved. And we do have, for our first item on the agenda, before we turn to Judge Conklin, Ms. Cowan, do we have any public comment?
There was no public comment received for the meeting.
All right, thank you. And we have Judge Jonathan Conklin appearing remotely from his court, along with Ms. Opsana Tuck, to talk about the 2024 Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee Annual Agenda. The Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee is commonly known as TCBAC. And as you all know, all advisory committees are required to develop an annual agenda that requires approval through various channels. And this is our duty to review TCBAC's annual agenda today. It does appear at pages 5 through 14 of your materials. Judge Conklin, I don't see her, but I know we have Judge Conklin. Good afternoon, Judge Conklin.
Good afternoon. I think Oksana is on here as well. I see her on the Zoom screen. Thank you to all of you. I'm sorry I'm not in the room. I appreciate your understanding for me appearing remotely. I'm in the middle of a jury trial. We just concluded the first stage of it about half an hour ago. So I'm glad I was here and I'm glad I'm here to continue with the next stage. But that being said, to make efficient use of your time, let me summarize our annual agenda that you have in front of you. I'll start, as many chairs do, with thanking staff for all the work they put in. The significant majority of this agenda is accomplished only, well, not only because of, but significantly because of all the work that staff puts in on all these projects. And I want to thank all of them, Zlatko, Fran, Oksana, Rose isn't with us today, others on budget services that are so efficient in getting this work done. With that, let me get to the agenda. As I said, I'm just going to do a little bit of reading here because it's rather technical at some points. We have newer one-time projects that are presented in the agenda, starting off with the Firearms Relinquishment Grant Program. That's the result of a $40 million one-time general fund grant included in the 2022 Budget Act. $36 million of that was distributed to the trial courts. And of that $36 million, Judicial Council previously allocated $20 million for 2023. It's a limited term project. And all of the funding under this grant must be completed by June 20th, 2025. I'm sure, as Zlatko will cover as well in the budget, the 2024 governor's budget proposes return of $20 million in unspent funding for this project as part of the solutions package to address the state's deficit. So we'll track this item during budget negotiations over the next few months to see what additional action is needed, if any. Unless I hear questions about these items, I'm just going to move through each one. Obviously, I have a little bit difficult time seeing into the room, so please feel free to stop me if questions come up on any of these items, and I'll refer them to Oksana to answer. Moving to the court cluster system, I know this gets a little bit down in the weeds. I remind you that TCBAC, our main job is to deal with and make recommendations concerning the allocation of the budget through various funding methodologies. The cluster system relates and comes from the funding methodology subcommittee work plan. It's an update to the work plan, including an evaluation of the four cluster models that we have to identify potential opportunities for refinement. The current model was developed in the early 2000s. This project is done in partnership with what we now refer to as DAC, the Data Analytics Advisory Committee. That's an ongoing refinement of the court cluster system. And then we have perhaps not most significantly, but at least as significant as the other ones, the funds held on behalf of policy update. This comes to you through, it filters up through a working group from the fiscal planning subcommittee, and then through the fiscal planning subcommittee. So the funds held on behalf of, to remind all of you, are funds that a court generally can hold back from the 3% holdback to allow them to complete ongoing projects, which is probably an overgeneralization of funds held on behalf of, but that's what it's meant for. As this project has progressed, I chair that, but all the members of the funds held on behalf of, pardon me, of FPS are very active in this. We meet numerous times a year to consider applications from the courts. And we just noticed some patterns that caused us to think that maybe there could be some refinements or some enhancements to funds held on behalf of to continue with the transparent nature of the program. It dealt with courts that were submitting amended requests and were, instead of amended requests, were repurposing those funds. And let me clarify, there was never a concern that any court was abusing funds held on behalf of in any way. But there was a concern that the definitions of how the project works were probably getting a little bit muddled. And so we wanted to assist the courts with funds held on behalf of. And that's what we've completed. We went through the fiscal planning subcommittee. I'll present this to TCBAC on our meeting, which coincidentally is Monday, to refine this. It'll, for instance, clarify that the courts are not going to be given these funds, that the funds will be held back in TCTF and allocated to them as they establish their spending, as they represented for the special project. So this was well received at FPS. We did not receive any concerns from the court, so we're hopeful that this will continue through TCBAC, and then I think ultimately come back to you for final approval of those funds held on behalf of refinements. So those are the projects related to newer one-time projects. I'm going to transition now to ongoing projects, unless there's any questions.
Yeah, Judge Conklin, this is Judge Mormon. Can you hear me?
Of course, yep.
Okay, great. So on the funds held on behalf of policy update, when it does come before JVBC, I think it would be a good opportunity to spend a few more minutes about how this policy intersects with the individual trial court's ability to hold back reserves, which are now capped at 3%, may increase to 5 or something in between. But for educational purposes, when it does come back, I'll be looking to you and Mr. Yamasaki, perhaps, and Oksana and anyone else that's involved. So the members of the committee understand how the funds held on behalf of, like I said, intersects with the ability for a trial court to carry monies over.
I like that suggestion, and we'll obviously pursue that. And just very quickly to help the folks in the room understand, if there's any concerns, there's the what we hope is now the 5%, which, and again, I'm not the expert here, so either David or Oksana, or at that time even Zlatko or whoever, will give the educational session. We'll help everybody understand both the intersection and the difference between the 5% holdback and the funds held on behalf of, which are essentially in excess of, or perhaps separate from the 5%. So the courts can have the 5%, but these funds held on behalf of are separate from that in the sense of courts with ongoing projects. It doesn't implicate the 5%. There was some discussion about that 5% evaporating or not being a limitation, which would have mooted the funds held on behalf of issue. But now, since there is the 5%, the funds held on behalf of remain a viable program for the courts. But unless Zlatko or anybody else wants to add anything to that, Judge Mormon, that's a great suggestion. We'll be sure to follow up on it.
I think it is a great, and we might even incorporate a couple of other things. For example, the court-funded request for facilities. These are all things that we've highlighted in a report that is required by the budget annually to report on sort of year-end expenditures, fund balance, relative funding levels. So there's a lot of good information there that gets submitted to legislature every February. It'd be good for us to go over that as well, because they're all on one of the tables, funds on behalf of the fund balance cap, CFRs, and amounts that come back to the Tri-Court Trust Fund.
Great.
Thanks for that suggestion. I'm making a note real quick, Gimme. Thank you.
Judge Coughlin, this is David Yamasaki. I just want to add a couple of pieces. Certainly the 3% cap raising to 5% is going to be a huge help for courts to address local unexpected expenses, whether it be a facility-related issue or you name it. We just never know. And it's very important for us to have resources available to keep our doors open and whatnot. The continued existence of the funds held on behalf of, I think, is really important, because some of the projects that we have to undertake, namely a case management system replacement, can be in the many, many, many millions of dollars. And the additional increase in the cap is not going to help courts get there, but certainly the funds held on behalf of program, as long as the monies are set aside within the spirit of how it was originally developed, I think is going to be very helpful. But as you cited earlier, refinements, I think, are very, very critical, and they're important to make. And so I think we'll probably be able to strike a good balance of preserving pieces of that, as well as working through the 5% cap, if that actually holds.
And on that point, if I might add, we had a meeting with the legislative analyst about the budget proposal last Friday. Judge Mormon was there, and our good analyst, Anita Lee, she did ask the question, what does the increasing of the cap to 5% do to the funds on behalf of process? And she already had an assumed answer, which was that it's not a substantial enough increase to no longer need the funds on behalf of process, but it may reduce the number that come, because, you know, percent's about, you know, $30 million. So $60 million more potentially held by the courts can help them in that kind of planning, but doesn't eliminate it. So
good. Yeah.
Good. And I appreciate the way David and Zlatko both phrased it. And I don't mean in any way to imply that it wasn't, but the funds held on behalf of is very important to the trial courts, and a very effective tool that, in my experience, sitting on FPS for years, they've used very efficiently and effectively. So I like it. Okay, so if there's no further questions on that, I'll briefly move through our ongoing projects. The first, most generally, that I think you're all aware of is allocations to the trial courts. As Martin used to say, as John used to say, and as I'm sure as people continue to say, within TICPAC and the budget, we don't allocate, we allocate. So TICPAC is really concerned with the allocations of the funds that have come in based upon the effective advocacy of the chief and others to get us our money. We'll continue to provide input on the 2023-2024 and now 24-25 allocations totaling $3 billion from various fund sources. Additionally, we're going to embark on, I think, what will turn out to be a very important and hopefully effective discussion about our existing allocation methodologies and alternative methodologies to advance the goal of funding equity and stability within the trial courts. That's going to start with the Funding Methodology Subcommittee, FMS, that I chair along with Chad Finke. I should also mention that Rebecca Fleming, as my vice chair, is integral in the success of all this as well. We've already had some discussions, and we're going to move forward. Zlatko has been very helpful to us. We have already on the agenda meetings with FMS to get this underway. It's not going to be a short-term project, but it's a project that we can't let remain get stale either. We're going to have to move forward on this. It may be multi-years, but that doesn't mean that we can wait to start this project. So I think you should look forward to seeing more information on that as you get further agendas from us. Additionally, is the workload formula adjustment process, ARP. It's a rather technical process that allows the trial courts on an annual opportunity to submit recommendations for changes to the workload formula. Those changes are usually very insightful, and they're addressed by annual call letters to the trial courts to submit those requests. The response date is just the end of this month, January 30th. And to the extent we receive any requests, they'll be directed to FMS for evaluation. There's also CARE Act funding, which is just in its infancy, though is critically important. It's originated as a result of new court-based mental health services. The 2023 Budget Act included $29.5 million for the trial courts for program planning and implementation. $21.7 million of that is to support cohort one trial courts. There's eight of those. And 7.7 to cohort two courts to support implementation in the upcoming 24-25 fiscal year. TCBAC has recommended utilizing the workload formula methodology to allocate that CARE Act funding, and we'll keep you apprised of how that comes along. We recognize that it's a high priority of the governor and the legislature to address the mental health and homeless issues. Work has gone into this and will continue to go on to this to stand up the program and to get methodologies in place to allocate that funding. There's also,
Interrupt you briefly. This is Judge Mormon again. With regard to the CARE Act funding, I think it's October 1, the cohort two courts come online. Might be October 31st. I think it's October 1. And there are webinars going on right now from the JCC offer. I'd attended one just a couple of days ago, or perhaps it was yesterday. There's another one in a couple of weeks. And the cohort one courts are being really, really helpful to the cohort two courts in, explaining how their programs work, you know, helping give advice. So depending on the size of the court, we're not having to, you know, recreate the wheel. Every county's different, of course, but I think the way it's been structured in terms of rollouts, it's been very useful for the branch, and we'll look forward to hearing more about the work for the upcoming year.
And if I might just add it, Judge Conklin used the word workload, and I want to confuse it with the workload formula, but rather a workload-based approach, because there are projections of number of petitions and filings by county, and so that's not the workload formula, but a workload-based approach.
And I think that those data points, you know, are still kind of, you know, the fill in the blank status, because we just don't know. You know, Los Angeles was on the webinar explaining their, it's a brand new program. They are, you know, they're educating us about how many petitions they get, but it could be very different across the state. So interesting. It'll be very interesting, very useful. Thank you. Any other comments before Judge Conklin can move along? All right, go ahead.
Great, thank you. And moving to the court interpreter funding methodology, that involves an ad hoc working group that was established to develop methodologies for allocations from the court interpreters program in the event of funding shortfall and to review existing methodologies. There is an existing methodology that was approved by the council in July of 2020, and it's been updated twice, July of 2022 and January of 2023. Though this methodology has been established, the ad hoc working group will continue its work into 2024 to consider data on video remote interpreting and how it can be utilized in the methodology. I know there's a lot of issues around funding for court interpreters, and we continue to be cognizant of that and to try to make effective use of that funding. I want to briefly just address some of the accomplishments that we've achieved this year, if there's no additional questions. Again, emphasizing that most of those accomplishments are in thanks to staff and all the trial courts throughout the state as they continue very hard work on what we've done. TCBAC and JBBC made 2023-2024 recommendations to the Judicial Council that included state trial court improvement modernization IMF funds and TCTF funds and general fund allocations to support the trial court programs and operations, included allocations of $45.2 million from IMF and $3 billion from TCTF and the general fund. Those were approved by the council at its July 2023 meeting. We also are working, obviously, on the governor's budget release in January through the spring to develop recommended allocation methodologies. There's a lot of work to be done there in a rather expeditious manner to address, given existing methodologies, how those methodologies will come into play for this money. It gets a little bit down in the weeds about how this money will be viewed from a perspectives of equity to the trial courts and how it should be distributed. We'll continue to work with the Department of Finance to develop other allocation methodologies. There's also backfill funding related to civil assessment fee revenue loss due to the reduction from civil assessment fees up from the $300 to the $100. Beginning in 2023-2024, civil assessment backfill funding is $100 million in ongoing. And I'm sorry, there's really no way I can turn off that phone. TICBAC developed a recommendation to allocate the $10 million one-time reduction, which is included in our current year allocation. We've also recommended allocation of $30 million ongoing general fund to increase the number of court reporters in family law and civil law case types. This methodology allocates funding proportionally based upon most recently published assessed judicial needs after a funding floor is provided. We've also recommended allocation of the $7 million ongoing general fund to address courts associated with increased transcript fees. This allocation, this methodology allocates the funding proportionally in one lump sum using an average of the prior three-year expenditures. Those allocations use established methodologies for updation each year. And finally, TICBAC recommends increasing approved allocations from the IMF and the TCTF for several judicial council offices to address unanticipated funding needs in support of the trial courts. The Revenue Expenditure Subcommittee and TICBAC acted promptly to consider the request from the council to those offices to ensure appropriate funding. And that basically summarizes our work plan and the work we have completed. And I'm more than happy to take questions if there are any.
Okay, I just have one. This is Judge Mormon again. And so thank you for your very thorough presentation, first of all. And second of all, on the last item on projects and achievements, highlights and achievements, number six, that state trial court improvement and modernization fund, et cetera, that's one-time money, right?
As I understand it, Zlatko?
Actually, we're done. Yeah. We're for these one-time needs.
Yeah, one-time needs, right.
But there is an annual allocation for the ongoing programs that comes through you as well.
Okay.
These were sort of special issues, especially as it relates to judicial officer education and some technology.
That's right.
They'll be returning. They needed a second amount of money.
That's right. Thank you for the reminder. That's great. Okay. Well, any other observations or questions? If not, the committee needs to entertain a motion to approve the annual agenda.
I move to approve the Bureau annual agenda.
Thank you. Second.
I'll second.
Ms. Hill seconds. Judge Crompton moves. Ms. Hill seconds. Any further questions or discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? The motion is unanimously approved. Thank you, Judge Conklin. You're welcome to stay. I know you have court, so thank you for your time. We appreciate all the work that you and the committee members do. Thank you, staff. There's a lot of work put into about 10 pages here.
Yeah, and thanks so much to all of you folks for continuing to work as we work through all these projects. We appreciate the collaborative nature of the committees, and I'll look forward to seeing everybody late tonight or probably more at the council meeting tomorrow.
Okay, safe travels.
Thank you.
All right, so we have a second item on our agenda today, which is information only, but obviously very important. Mr. Theodorovic,
you are going to give us an update on the governor's budget proposal for 2024-25.
Yeah, and thank you, Judge Mormon. And last week, Wednesday, the 10th is required by, I believe, the Constitution. They, on or before, had to submit the governor's proposed budget. I think the big news at that point broadly was this deficit. We had been anticipating, we knew that there was some level of deficit already anticipated coming out of when the budget was signed back in June of last year. And the governor did identify his math. And I emphasize that, and I'll get to that in a little bit about this $37.8 billion gap. And I wanted to, and as it's been now a week since that we've been, there's things that have been, you know, published or analyses that have been released, so we're able to give you a little bit more context about things. And so I just wanted to take a minute to just describe to you, maybe looking back at the Great Recession, what was really the big differences. And there were some significant budget gaps from 8-9 to 12-13, ranging from $15 billion at the time the budgets were enacted, or identifying them as big as $60 billion. And the budgets were much smaller, about half of what they are now, in the $90 to $100 billion range. So large budgets, small budget deficits, much smaller budgets. So the challenges were great then. It doesn't mean that they're not challenging now, but still we're in a different place, because back then, reserves were in the $1.3, $1.8, $2.9 billion range, very small reserves. And so you're looking at, you know, $18 to $30 billion of reserves that the state's been working, has had at its disposal these last couple of budget cycles. I think it's a testament to the work that Governor Brown did to really bring about stabilization to the budget, and knowing the ups and the downs. And even with that, the ups and the downs, still dealing with the, again, projected $38 billion shortfall. I think Adam did a great job last week on the call describing it. But just to remind you, using $13.1 billion of reserves, some actual budget reductions of $8.5 billion, internal borrowing and revenues, $5.7 billion, delaying expenditures, meaning things that were anticipated for, say, 1 year, they're spreading out, and that's helping them about $5 billion, shifting some expenditures from the general fund to other funds, $3 billion. And then one thing I just want to note is they're shifting a month's of payroll from June to July, which saves them $1.6 billion. So, you know, in the magic of the budget, there are different things that you can do, and that is one of them. But it's not the first time it's happened, and it happened during the Great Recession. They did that. And then during the good times, they moved it back, knowing that maybe there would be a need for it. But those are the kinds of things that, you know, are the gaps of being, that were being filled. We have good news on our end in terms of the branch solutions, that they didn't result in any baseline reductions. We were trying to protect the branch and really scouring our books. And we have some fund balance in the Chautauqua Trust Fund that we discussed at a prior educational session. They went and are taking $75 million of that. It's a small adjustment that relates to some emergency funding that is rarely used in the branch, and then some unspent firearms funds. And finally, some deferrals of some construction for courthouses. So we feel good, but I think it would be failure on our part if we don't think about the budget horizon, and that includes where we are in the current year. The governor did issue a directive to departments that report to him about freezing unnecessary expenditures. That's something that we need to be, you know, cognizant of. It's part of the overall budget solution, though we did not get budget reductions, but there is a sort of an expectation that we are aware of the budget condition and should be participating in that. So that's current year. We know about how the governor is managing the budget for us, but the governor is also, the Department of Finance, required to issue a five-year budget forecast. And we are balanced, proposed balanced in 24-25. We immediately have negative fund balances in the general fund, state general fund, of tune of $22.5 billion. And that's assuming the revenue forecast that the governor has put out, that the LAO commented on, the overall budget structure this past weekend, in which they try to describe why their $68 billion compares to this governor's $38 billion. And it's something that Adam and I have talked about, and it's how you define the problem, what you put in the problem bucket and what you leave out of the problem bucket. And so the LAO believes that the real difference between the two forecasts is about $10 billion as it relates to revenue forecasting. The administration took a reduction, sees a reduction in, say, education funding, not as a solution and a problem, but it's naturally happens when revenues are reduced. It's part of the formula. So they didn't call it an affirmative action to reduce, but rather it just happens, and therefore it didn't need to be part of the problem. So they're actually not that far off. Fundamentally, there's going to be obviously things to consider in the world of education funding, but they have said that the governor's revenue forecasts are optimistic, but plausible and plausible. And so not outside the realm of possibility, but even with their better revenue forecast, again, $22.5 billion forecasted shortfall and shortfalls going over the forecast period. So we need to be mindful of that. I think that's a key. We got out of Wednesday last week, you know, thankful that, you know, that we're not having experiencing any budget reductions, but that we can't forget that this is not just a 1 year budget. And so actions that we can take in, you know, before the end of this fiscal year can help us possibly avoid future budget reductions that may be necessary to solve a you know, growing deficit in the out years. But with that said, any questions about sort of the global budget picture before I talk a little bit about where we are in terms of some good news in the branch?
Adam, did you want to add anything?
I think that the takeaway, I think, should be we are not going to ostrich this. We're not going to bury our heads in the sand. We know that the administration and the legislature have a serious problem, and they have tough decisions in front of them. And as painful as some of the sweeps are in the reserves, we know that we're not immune to the fiscal realities. And we want to be good partners, and we understand the situation that we're in. So I think that's sort of our primary takeaway from this budget, and I want to continue to be good partners. I think that it's really interesting because in some of the previous discussions I've had over the last few weeks, there's been some positive economic data, small business strength. The LAO released some seasonal information about holiday shopping that maybe looked disappointing, but then yesterday they came out with retail sales and looking really, really strong. And so I think that putting this budget in context is that we've got a really tough budget situation in a strong economy. And one of the things that we used to talk about when we were forecasting Medi-Cal expenditures is that the estimate is good, it's the actuals that come in. One of the things we know about budgeting is that these numbers are going to be different than what we project. And they're either going to be to the good or they're going to be to the bad. And right now we've got projected deficits in relatively strong economic conditions. And so we're just going to be prepared, and we're going to continue to try and be good partners. And I think that's our takeaway at this point.
That's a good point. So in terms of the detail, and I'm not going to go into it, hopefully you all got the chief's message and understanding that point, that we need to be partners and we need to do our part to help with the budget situation and the memo that outlines the detail of it. But again, we've just mentioned about the fund balance cap being an important change. That's something that's been a challenge for courts to manage, but acknowledging some growth, but not, you know, a lifting of the cap entirely. Recognize, I think they're both, they're interested in ensuring that there's good stewardships of funds, but giving us some more flexibility in the small court, sort of maximum above $100,000. I think is they recognize that the small courts with their percentages don't really get to hold much. And whether you're big or small, I use the example, if you have a car and you, at a court and it blows up, and you, where are you going to get $50,000 at a drop of a hat to go and replace that? So these smaller courts, that's a real benefit there. Talked about CARE Act. We were reminding folks in the memo that despite the budget condition, that the governor's not pulling back on that, you know, that key initiative, and is, you know, we're funding reaching, you know, over $100 million. I think that was just again an important reminder. And then more on sort of boring technical parts of the budget that we work on that don't seem to like gain us anything, but without them, we'd be significant losses. Our backfills of our funds, be it the state trial court trust fund or the state court facilities construction fund, those are, you know, over $100 million of backfills between those two funds. And again, absent those kinds of backfills and commitments of general fund, there would be significant cuts to operations. And so, a lot of, you know, I think good, but as Adam has said, I think that message of we need to be prepared in this year of opportunity where we, you know, we have this growth, what do we do to help manage the budget and do our part, which we always have. And to the extent that we can do things to avoid baseline budget reductions that take us down permanently until, you know, the times are better, this is in our best interest. And it is proven in the last two budgets that when we do that, we can not have baseline reductions. In terms of next steps, we've had some initial meetings with the LAO, as I've said, the Legislative Analyst's Office. We'll have staff meetings with the budget staff later in this month. There'll be overview hearings scheduled for the 23rd or 24th. Both houses will hear the legislature's legislative analyst and the governor's Department of Finance present their budget proposals. And then we'll have budget hearings, of which we'll have Judge Moorman, David, and Judge Hernandez come and be part of. We think it's important that we have an opportunity for court leadership to talk about it. And they were great on Friday answering questions that we just couldn't as staff, and having that real life world examples of and able to speculate on things that we wouldn't even have context for were really helpful. Our big point is Tuesday, May 14th, the Department of Finance is required to issue an updated budget every May 14th on or before. And that's where the governor is required to re-propose a balanced budget in light of April tax receipts and enrollment, caseload, population, such as education, health and human services, prisons and whatnot. So really, you know, that is to us another, it is the next key moment. And we'll be looking at all the economics as Adam's described, the revenues that are coming in, the actual revenues, again, estimate versus actuals, and see what we can surmise. But we won't get any real next official update until that May 14th date. And if revenues go in a negative direction, we need to be prepared. There may be further action that's needed to maintain a balanced budget. And also, obviously, the legislature also has their priorities as it relates to the budget and may have disagreements. And that might change the budget landscape as well. So this is just a proposal, as we say, every January. But we're going to work hard to protect the branch as best we can. And then we'll see what happens come June, that they have to pass a budget, the legislature, by the 15th. Otherwise, they're not paid. So they're motivated, highly motivated. And then the governor has 12 days to sign that budget. We'll see what comes of that. But we're going to be doing our darnest to help protect the branch from any harmful budgetary actions.
Okay, so, obviously the next 5 months are going to be really busy. We'll be busy. We start planning for the next fiscal year while watching the current fiscal year, and then we're planning for the fiscal year beyond that. So we'll be starting to think about 25, 26, if I have my numbers right, which I always thought would be in like a Jetson on one.
Exactly.
Todd has one, I know.
Right.
Airstream.
And so we have our next scheduled meeting for February 9th. That will be remote. Those of us who may be in San Francisco, maybe we'll be in the room together, but we can plan on meeting remotely. That there are going to be revenue reports monthly from DOF, right? So, Adam and Zlatko and Angela will be reporting to us on what those say, as well as all the other reports that are meaningful about statewide revenues and how that affects the 24-25 budget year, but also 25-26 and out into the distance. So I do, I think everybody in this committee agrees, and I think we should, you know, back the chief up and Shelley and budget services staff that the branch needs to recognize we're in a very good position, but we need to be good government partners and be frugal in our spending public money. And to the extent that we can help, we should help. And we're grateful for the stability, because I think the branch has really been looking for stability, and we have stability, and we didn't have any baseline cuts, and hopefully we won't in the future. So I'll just want to, unless anybody else has something to add, David, you probably do, but I would just want to thank budget services staff again, Zlatko, Adam, Angela, everybody, Fran, I know you're out there, Fran, Karen, Sarah, everybody. And I, you know, I'll just call out my partner here to my right. You know, Mr. Yamasaki gets called upon a lot just to kind of give context to things in the moment when answers need to be provided to other branches of government. And so, David, thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much, Judge Warman. I hope I live up to the reputation of being contributory. But let me just say this. I absolutely think that we have to kind of put our heads together to come up with approaches to resolve the problems that the state is facing. The last downturn in the economy in California produced a different way of thinking how we were going to be budgeting our courts, and that produced the workflow funding methodology. It was difficult having been in the middle of all that. I think it really set us on a really good path going forward to not only address equity issues, but also improve funding for the branch. As the state's budget increased, so did ours. And a lot of it had to do with the very smart people within the judicial branch who, you know, provided ideas and different ways of doing business. And we've been in a very good place the last few years. It's time again. It's time again for us to look at new creative ways, because we all know budgets go up and down, and we're there. We're in the down cycle. What we have been able to do, and largely because of the assistance by the JCC staff and the chief, have been able to stave off baseline reductions in the trial courts through some creative approaches. But we all know what's ahead of us. There's not an endless supply of one-time reserves in the general fund. The trial court trust fund, which we turned to help us get through this, does not have an infinite amount of money either. And we're gonna have to come up with some new approaches, maybe that we've not seen before, to help us come up with some solutions so that we do not sustain baseline reductions, which will be very, very bad for us in light of how long it took for us to get the last round of reductions that we did. So I encourage all of us to go back to our respective areas and just alert everybody that we're gonna have to have some really good conversations and some creative solutions to help us get through this down cycle once again. I think we can do it, but we obviously need to collaborate a great deal and be wise to what the fiscal outlook looks like in California until things turn around. So I have a lot of optimism that we can get through this with everybody's collaboration, cooperation.
Thank you. All right, any other observations, questions, comments today? If not, then as I've said, our next meeting is February 9th. And Angela, I think that will conclude our meeting today, and we can conclude the report.